This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Horse racing is big business. Every year, millions of people are glued to their seats watching the Kentucky Derby and other racing events. But not everybody knows about the contributions of African-American jockeys to the sport of kings. That's because in the 21st century, horse racing's not exactly racially diverse. But if you look at the history of this sport, especially before the 20th century, you get a different picture. A project called Too Black, Too Fast is trying to shed some light on this forgotten past. It is the creation of Michael McBride. He's an artist and instructor of art at Tennessee State University. North Carolina State is currently showing Too Black, Too Fast at an exhibit at its African American Cultural Center Gallery through April 15th. Michael McBride joins us by phone from Tennessee. Michael, welcome.
Thank you, Frank.
How'd you get interested in this subject?
This started, I guess, back in 1991. A good friend of mine that had an African-American bookstore here in Nashville and approached me, because he knew I was a history buff, approached me about if I had done images or did I know anything about black jockeys and horse racing, because some officials from Churchill Downs had talked to him to see if he carried any of these things in his bookstore. So he told me about it. I said, no, I didn't know anything about it. So I went to the library and started looking up the section, you know, about horse racing, and I picked up this book called Race Lines. And when I opened the book, you know, I got the thumbing through it, and then all of a sudden I saw all of this information about black jockeys. And then as I began to read more, it was absolutely fascinating. And I kept saying, wonder why I've never heard of this one. It's in the library. Why no one knows about this?
Well, yeah. What did you learn?
Well, I mean, that they were, it started back in the late 1600s. Horse racing was the national sport. You know, when they came over from England, horse racing was what they did. Open field races, two-man races. But they had these slaves, and they were really mere boys, because you need a light person riding a horse, you know, you couldn't be too heavy. And that's what they did. And starting one of the greatest racing teams ever was the plantation owner Willie Jones and his slave Austin Curtis, who was the jockey. They were phenomenal. And they started in the, I guess, early to mid 1700s.
Wow.
Yeah.
And of course, this is a dangerous sport. I mean, these are very large animals moving very fast and require a fair amount of control, again, by a person who's fairly light.
Right. And who knew horses, because most of these slaves, it all kind of started from the Barbary Coast, you know, west coast of Africa. And the barb horse, bred with the English saddle horse, began to move toward our modern thoroughbred horses that we have today. And the horses all came along with the middle passages and the slaves. It all followed the same route coming over.
So black jockeys associated with the sport very, very early. Did this have any effect on the dynamic, on race dynamics, when you had an extremely successful jockey, somebody who's actually making money for the plantation owner, if not prior?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. It was a very interesting, you know, dynamics. In terms of that, because the relationship between the jockey and the slave owner was more like a partnership, and the jockeys weren't treated, you know, like everyday slaves, because they were kind of special. They didn't have, I mean, they dressed well, they, you know, ate well. I mean, it was very interesting.
You've got some great stories in there that illustrate this. Tell us about Charles Stewart.
Charles Stewart, this is like 18, I think, 20 in the 1820s or 30s. Charles Stewart was a jockey in Louisiana. And Charles Stewart was making so much money that his owner hired a Chinese agent to handle Charles Stewart's money, yet he was a slave. And he earned enough money to buy the freedom of his children and his wife. And he would actually travel. He would have traveling papers to actually take the horse, money, go run races in other, you know, other states, come back with the money. he really couldn't count anything, but he knew how to keep numbers in his head.
And he had an agent.
Managed
to get his family out, and yet they certainly weren't going to let him get out, for he couldn't buy his own freedom.
Right. He has, you know, and I think it was written that when his honor said that when he passed, if he passed away before Charles would have his, you know, freedom and stuff, whatever. Wow. But it was very interesting.
Amazing. Another story about Andrew Jackson. Tell us that one.
Our great old Hickory president. Andrew Jackson was very interesting. As you know, he was a fiery gentleman. He loved to gamble and he loved horse racing. And he was, I'll tell you this, when he became president, I think it was like 1828 or whatever it is, he had a racing team in the White House. 90% of them were black jockeys. He had a racetrack, and after they were whole session, whatever, William Henry Harrison, Secretary of State, was his track master. They
would leave and they he had go. A racing team at the White House?
Yes, he did.
Wow.
Yes, he did.
Were we paying for this?
Hey, I guess so.
So he loved to bet, but there's a great story about losing not liking it.
There was this jockey out of North Carolina, as a matter of fact. Monkey Salmons was his name. He was like 4'9", hunchback, long arms and everything. But Monkey was not because of him being black. That was a term that they used for anyone that was quick and, you know, and agile and all of that. And so he was an incredible horseman and jockey. So he was hired out from by his people in North Carolina, hired him out to a man here in Gallatin, a Colonel Hardin or somebody, and he rode his horse. Well, there was a horse called Haney's Maria, and Haney's Maria could not be defeated with Monkey Simons on it every time they had a race. So Andrew Jackson kept trying to beat Haney's Maria, so he couldn't, so he decided to buy Haney's Maria and put his jockey on it, and Monkey Simon got on another horse and beat him again. Right. And so at the end, Andrew Jackson said, I think in his memoirs, he said that his only regret that he ever had was he never could defeat Haney's Maria, but that's not true. He could never defeat Monkey Salmons.
This is a great story, Mike. I'll tell you why, because knowing that Monkey Salmons is one of the greatest jockeys ever and came from North Carolina could recast the history of NASCAR. Now, I don't know if it goes back that far, but...
Yeah, I know it's interesting, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
It's pretty amazing.
Because I think, and I don't know that much about NASCAR, but some friends of mine were talking to me about that and said that, you know, they used to have those black drivers, you know, driving and licking and everything and doing that, and that's kind of how NASCAR began.
Wow. Well, I guess that's not how the legend has. It certainly has these guys up in the hills running their whiskey away from the revenues.
But Frank, let me tell you what's interesting about the jockey thing. When you go to Churchill Downs, if one has ever been, when you step in there, you see the big bronze, life-size bronze of Aristides, the first horse in the Derby in 1875. But beside him, you see a bronze of Pat Day. Well, Pat Day is a modern-time jockey. But you don't see a bronze of Oliver Lewis, the black jockey that rode Aristides. Mm.
But let me ask you this, because you said you were surprised. What you have seen, at least back in the 60s and 70s, maybe we stopped seeing them now, was the icon of racist lawn furniture or lawn ornaments, black jockey. I mean, in other words, why is it surprising?
You know the story of Jocko. That's what it's called.
I guess I don't.
No, let me tell you the story of Jocko. This goes back to George Washington. Jocko was a stable boy for George Washington. When he went to cross the Delaware River, you know, that winter to fight, well, Jocko was standing holding the lanterns and holding the rings of the horses because it was so foggy at night, they needed to be able to see where to come back to. He stood there. The battle lasted longer. When they came back, Jocko had frozen to death, standing there still holding the lantern with the horses. George Washington was so moved, he had his blacksmith to do an iron statue in honor of Jocko, you know, to be placed in the front lawn of the house, and he had his generals all to get one too. And that is how the story of the lawn jockey, and then during the Underground Railroad, any house along the route of the Underground Railroad that had that lawn jockey in front with the lit lantern, you knew it was a safe house to move through the Underground Railroad.
Well, this takes us a little afield, but how did that then become the icon of racist?
Because, as anything, you know, racism to me is ignorance and uneducation. You know, you're not educated, so if you know the real thing, then that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's that we, and that's what the whole beauty of Too Black, Too Fast is that we're trying to educate and dispel myths and things like that.
It's great. Tell us a little bit about the exhibit and the multimedia presentation.
Well, Too Black, Too Fast is a multimedia project that deals with, we have an exhibition of paintings and bronzes, oil paintings and bronzes, and we have a movie that's being worked on and handled by Carolyn McDonald, and we have a documentary that's going to be handled by Monty Secura, documentarian. We have a soundtrack of original music that Shannon Sanders, who's NDRE's musical producer, is putting together. And if you go to the website, you hear the first track, the song. And then we have a play that was commissioned 2 years ago that's been written by Michael L. Walker. And we have a dance that is being worked on, a choreographed dance about Too Black, Too Fast is being worked on this year by Rossi Turner. We got education materials. We just finished the first, I'm reading the galleys of the first fact book. We're going to have 4 volumes about, you know, black jockeys and things like that. And hopefully in the next 3 to 4 weeks, it'll be available. We plan on putting it on ebook. And we have educational things, puzzles, and
you've even got an ex-pro football player who's done
one
of the sculptures.
That's right, man. My sculptor, George Knox. Yeah, Joe Namath's running back. George is fabulous. And the wonderful thing about this exhibit is that this is probably the first time since Elwood Troy did it the first time in 1893 with paintings about black jockeys and trainers and all, and this whole representation. And I know this is the first time there are bronzes, you know, sculptures done, basically like that.
So you're having works made, and they'll be on exhibit at NC State, and
right.
The exhibit goes through April 15th. But there are also, this has been documented through history, so there are paintings that go back to the 19th century. Tell us about the art that had been done.
Well, Elwood Troy was a famous artist, and he would go and paint the horses. You know, and he also painted the jockeys, and he got in a little bit of trouble doing that because they were saying, you know, why are you portraying these slaves, you know, and all, you know, and ex-slaves and all these people in this manner, you know, well-dressed and this and putting them in the pictures and all of that. But that's really what he was doing, and he painted prize bulls, he painted, you know, all of those things. But he was the artist of that day.
And are some of his work, is it reflected in the exhibit?
None of his work is reflected in the exhibit. It's just strictly everything we've created. Some of the pieces we've created, I've done portraits of the jockeys, and then we have scenes, race scenes that I've put together based on my readings and stuff like that. And some of the things are just, you know, just showing images of black jockeys and horse racing, and we're still working. That's the small part. The total exhibit hopefully is going to be finished because we've got to do bronze casting and everything. It's going to be about 90 pieces, 65 paintings and 25 bronzes, which is all done and ready.
And the documentation, and there's a documentary in the works as well, right?
Yeah, we're getting ready to start on that. The movie is moving a little bit further ahead than the documentary at this time. But, you know, everything, it's got all these different tentacles, you know.
That's great stuff. Now, we talked about the success of black jockeys. It seems to go up into the very early part of the 20th century, and then we don't see anymore. Yeah, what happened?
Well, several things come into play. Well, around the 1910, you had the Jim Crow laws where blacks and whites, you know, segregation happened. Then, at the same time, black jockeys were getting bigger, you know, and that didn't help. They were eating better, living better, getting bigger. And you had the Latinos and Hispanic jockeys coming on right at the turn of the century because they were still small in stature. And then the money got tremendous at that time. So black jockeys kind of fade away. The last up until 2000, the last black jockey to race in the Kentucky Derby was like 1917. Hmm. After that, it wasn't until the year 2000, I think 2001 or 2, the St. Julian black jockey out of Louisiana ran in the Derby.
Wow. What kind of reaction have you been getting now that you're sort of revealing this untold
history? Oh, man, it's been great. I appreciate the public. It's really, really been very well accepted. People are excited about it. They're surprised, and they're just it's amazing to them that it's been around all of this and they didn't know about it. Even people in the horse racing industry.
You believe this project is divinely sanctioned and inspired.
Absolutely.
Why?
Absolutely. Well, because when I first got started on this, I never knew it would turn into Too Black Too Fast. In 1991, when I was doing this, I was just going to do some paintings and show this, you know, and just show images. But I kept feeling that there was something bigger than this. And then I took on a project manager by the name of Darrell Stinson, and we met. And when he had it for 2 or 3 months and he looked at it, he said, this is bigger. I really see this as a bigger thing. So we spent a year putting this thing together, putting Too Black Too Fast together in terms of all these components and what was needed. And that's how it's, you know, that's how it's come about.
Including the feature film that you made reference to earlier.
Right. Right.
And I know there's an A-list actor that might be involved. Can you give us a sense of what the feature film centers on?
Well, the feature film is a contemporary film, and it's surrounded by this young teenager and this old man. And it's about this young teenager coming from an urban environment, going back to his parents' home in North Carolina. He's in Baltimore. They come to North Carolina. He's small in stature, okay? He looks like he's about 12 or 13, but he's like 15. He didn't know he had an affinity for horses, but he gets in trouble in school, this gun thing, gets in trouble in school, and they put him on this horse ranch, which is, you know, the alternative to putting you in juvenile thing. He goes to this horse ranch, stripped of all of the modern technologies and everything, and he begins to experience this thing. And if you think of the idea of Connecticut Yankee and King Arthur's Court, mm-hmm. the movie's going to go back and forth like that through this young man. So the story of the black jockeys is going to be told through him experiencing and doing all that. It's really, really fascinating.
It sounds
fascinating.
So how involved are African-Americans these days in horse racing?
They are still racing. They are racing on what we call a tier two, you know, level. They're not in major stake races. They're not getting a chance to get to the Derby. They're not getting a chance to do that. But they are still racing. A lot of the trainers are not getting a chance to train the great horse. And, you know, so racism has really reared its ugly head, I feel, in this, you know.
Would you like to see greater involvement?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it would be wonderful to see a black jockey or two racing in the Derby, then racing in the Preakness, then racing in the Belmont. You know, just see one step forward.
Michael McBride, thanks so very much.
Thank you, Frank.
Michael McBride is an artist and instructor of art at Tennessee State University and the creator of the multimedia project Too Black, Too Fast. North Carolina State University is currently showing the Too Black, Too Fast exhibit at its African American Cultural Center Gallery through April 15th. You can find out more information at tooblacktoofast.com. Just ahead, the music of Onward Soldiers. Stay with us on The State of Things.